G'day, welcome to the Raw Rugby Podcast. I'm Christy Doran, Matt Tamua. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, Christy. It was a ripper weekend of the Anzac game. There were some big ones too. And our Aussie teams probably flew the flag pretty well.
One from five, rather. The main one with the Brumbies, you're right, your former team. It was a cracking weekend. I'm going to ask you off the top, though. Would you want to see an Anzac Day test, or are you happy with the status quo of Trans-Tasman fixtures?
Oh, I definitely would like to see that. I think it makes sense. I actually had a friend message me during the week. He's a huge AFL guy, and, you know, they've obviously got their Anzac matches where you're selling out the G, and the only way that rugby in Australia can really kind of compete with that or make a dent in the landscape is we get a test match and a Bledisloe one. So, look, why not? We've done June tests in the past where we used to have a 3-week break during Super Rugby. Why not? We have 1 week. Let's give the fans what they want.
Mate, I completely agree. And the reason is because currently there's two test matches, two Bledisloe tests. There was an acceptance that the Wallabies weren't good enough to go three in a rugby championship with the additional tagged on Bledisloe game. Why not the Bledisloe match on that Anzac weekend? It makes complete sense to me. It's the third one that you can find in the calendar. It's a cash cow, but more than anything, as you just said, it'll pack out stadiums. And it's also another opportunity to go, let's shine a spotlight and remind people that Super Rugby is on either side of it as well. You can create the discussion around Wallabies, which drives headlines, subscriptions, the rest of it. I think it's an absolute no-brainer. And super franchises might go, you know what, oh, 1 or 2 weeks, or we, you know, the Wallabies coach Joe Schmidt might go, you know what, I don't have long enough to get my you know, plans in place. But ahead of a Lions match next year, wouldn't it be awesome for him just to be able to have a test match to harden some of those players before the biggest tour and most important tour in 12 years for Australian rugby?
Yeah, look, and the concerns you're raising are quite, they're valid, but I'd like to see the game drived by the fans a bit more. Like, we would like to see this, we would like to see that, and then let's figure out what it looks like. Does it look like Super Rugby keeps on going? Does it look like Super Rugby has a week off? I don't know. But I think if we kind of set our goal in the sense of providing this, because it's clearly, like, marketing-wise, it makes sense. You know, the fans want it. If we set that as our goal and then we kind of work everything around that, that would be, for me, that would be a far better way to kind of assess it rather than just constantly finding reasons not to, oh, not enough time. Like, you know, the Kiwis won't have the same amount of time. It might mean that we get our Wallabies early in the season and they get into camps earlier. Like, we've got to change things. And like I said, I'd like it to be a little bit more fan-centric.
Yeah, it would be, you know, you can't, I don't like things just being dominated by money, but at a time when we're talking about the AGM, where today Rugby Australia announced a $9.2 million loss, that to me is an extra $1 million straight away. New Zealand rugby struggling themselves financially, even off the back of a couple of $100 million Silver Lake deal with private equity just a couple of years ago. It's, you do it. Alternate years across, you know, it's so simple, I think, and such a recipe for success that you're crazy if you're not considering it. And I just think that it also would shine a greater spotlight on the Wallabies and allow for those discussions to start earlier, which is only a really good thing for both the fans, media, and the like. Nice little discussion there, but there's a lot more coming up on this podcast. Obviously, a fantastic Super Rugby weekend. A lot of jeopardy on the line, a lot of big talking points. But first of all, we're going to go and talk to Lane Morgan, who's out in the town celebrating a 50-14 victory over the Fijiana Drua up in Ballymore on Sunday afternoon. Great win for the Tars, their first since 2022, but also their fifth title. She's going to be coming up right now. Hey, awesome to have Lane Morgan on the line. And she's not just joining us after a Super W victory, but she's joining us out in the town. Where are you, Lane?
We're at the Beresford at the moment with our team kick on, which is always fun. It's going into the herding hours, so I don't know how much longer it'll kick on for, but it's been a good one celebrating with the girls.
What do your teammates think that you're just jumping on the line quickly, getting away from everyone? Are you being forced to have a couple of extra drinks on a Mad Monday?
No, I've actually done it pretty secretly. I've just slipped out on the sly, so I haven't gotten in too much trouble until they realise.
And are we at the start of a Mad Monday? We're at the end. What, just give us a bit over the bell curve? Where's the...
Oh.
Second half?
Yeah, second half. Definitely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was it like last night when the great scenes at Ballymore? And I imagine, you know, the game finishes at about 4 o'clock, 4:30. That allows you to have a big night.
Yeah, it was unreal. I think everyone was on just such a high. You know, we haven't had that trophy back in so long in Waratah. So, and to get the win with the girls, just it's so much fun. And down in Fortitude Valley, had a bit of fun out there. So it was good. But Queensland, it was good to be able to go to the home of women's rugby to have the match. Could have been better if we're at home in Sydney, but nah, Queensland put on a good show and we got around it and everyone had such a great night.
Yeah, you're on home turf now, which is good, I'm sure. You know, the score was quite lopsided at the end there, but it didn't come without a little bit of struggle early on.
Yeah, definitely. We knew Fiji was going to really step up and bring their fight in that first half. We knew that we'd probably get in first and, you know, Fiji would bite back. We always get into that slight tussle with Fiji, but if we know if we don't let them keep that momentum and we take that momentum away from them, that we'll get up. We just had to ride that little rough patch where they were stepped up and went hard, and we knew that once we got through that patch, we'd get on top and blow them out, so it was good.
Yeah, you got on top all right, 50 points to 14 in the end. It was 17-14 though early in the second half. I don't want to talk too much about the game because we know what happened there. I want to talk more about the try that you set up at the end of the first half. The decision to play on quickly, you know, pass to Miller to score her second. Lane, how many times have you watched that on replay and how many times have you told your teammates about that one?
Oh, look, it's unreal. It was such a good moment and play. I love a quick tap. I usually get in trouble half the time. So it was nice that this one pulled off, which was good. But it was so unreal and such a good moment in the game. You know, those tries mean the most in the grand final. So I knew as soon as I heard that whistle, that pack was going to be slow in getting back. And if I could just isolate that defender out on the left and get one of our fast wingers like Desi in the clear, she was going to be away.
Yeah, it was very well done. And look, Lane, I'm sure performing in big games, you know, finals in particular, are important for future selection. How much do the girls have an eye on the announcement later this week and obviously a packed schedule coming up?
Yeah, it's definitely a packed schedule for what's coming up next. I think that team announcement comes out tomorrow morning. So I think there's going to be a lot of positives coming through with that as a reflection of the Waratah's performance. I back a lot of our girls and I'm really excited for what's to come. But yeah, it looks like a busy year for us. It's actually not something I've really thought about too much. I try not to think about all that stuff when we're in season with Waratah. So I know now we're getting into camp, I think, in the next 2 days. So trying to get those audit, like every your week into routine and everything like that and get prepared to go in. It's a bit of a crazy moment at the time, but yeah, it's really exciting.
So Joe Yap was there. Do you just say to Joe afterwards when you're having some bubbles or whatever you're drinking, you just say, like, are you picking the whole team? Because you went undefeated throughout the season.
Honestly, it was a great season with the girls and I think a lot of them deserve it. So hopefully we see a lot of Sky Blue girls in that team.
Maddie Tamua is on mute at the moment trying to ask a question. He's only done about 10 of these.
Yeah, sorry. I'll put it down to the 9%ers. No, Lane, I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but you know, women's sport really getting a bit of momentum, and probably to be fair, the 15 side of our game has maybe lagged a little bit from say the sevens and you know, basketball, cricket, AFL. It must be nice to get a bit of like corporate support in terms of funding and really having an eye to that 29 World Cup at home.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's been a slow process for rugby union, but, you know, it is coming and we're heading in the right direction, which is great. But you see all the steps and strides that other teams are taking and other people are doing, and we're very envious for what opportunities females are getting, and we know it's going to come. And that signing with Cadbury is just, it's such a great thing. We're so excited, and Cadbury have been great in women's sport, and you know, it takes our team to another level. There's not many other teams in the world that aren't professional. Most teams that we play through our regular series internationally are professional, so it's really hard to keep up with that and actually bring an 80-minute performance against those teams. So it's a huge challenge, and it's so great now that we can actually put more time and more effort into things because we have that funding that takes off the work pressures. But you know, I definitely think there's more to go and more to do, but what we've just done is amazing and such a big time for women's sport, and especially in rugby union. It's great to see.
Yeah, it is. It's really exciting. And yeah, you know, wrap for you. Switching just a little bit, Lane, I'm keen to get your thoughts on World Rugby's trial with the ball. I think they're, for those unaware, they're trialing the size 4.5 ball, and you see it in cricket. And I'm really keen to see what do you think about that? Is it a step in the right direction? Is it a case of, you know, no, we want to do it the other way, or I'm really, really interested to understand someone who it affects, you know, more so.
Yeah. What your thoughts are. Look, I definitely think it's not going to hinder anything. It's not going to be a negative for the game. I definitely think you'll see us being able to throw it faster and longer than what we normally do with a regular footy ball. But I also think that using the same ball as a man and being able to play the game that we do shows a massive talent to the women, like that we're doing just as much as they're doing with the same size ball. So for me, it's a bit of a much of a muchness. I could go with or without. I definitely love the challenge of being able to do it with the same. But I know that there would probably be some more exciting things offloads wise and that power in the past if we do go that smaller ball. So definitely interesting to see how it goes and what comes in force of the game.
Yeah, how much, like, as a halfback, how does that affect you?
To be honest, I think it'll be a great little thing that I can use. Just being able to grab the ball a lot easier, to be honest. Like, my hand isn't the same size as that most males, so being able to just pick it up in one hand and being able to do those offloads will be really helpful. And I'm sure, like, the power and force that I can put through that ball will make it go faster and deliver it quicker and bring a faster quality game to rugby union for women. So I think it'll have a massive impact on my game. I think it would make my job a little bit easier, but yeah, either. I think the challenge is good with the normal ball, but it would be exciting to see what it's like with the smaller.
Yeah, I'm very excited by it, if I'm being honest, Lane. I think anything we can do to make the game more exciting in the men's and the women's, and I see the ball is almost like a reflective of the game growing, and you probably saw early days the women had to wear like men's shirts and have these baggy as, you know, and then we slowly started saying like, no, you know, we have, you know, women athletes, we need to get some stuff that's more suitable. And for me, it's just another step in the right direction, I think, and probably a sign of really good progressive conversations.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I've still got some men's sizing stuff that is sitting in my cupboard that I have to wear soon, so it's a bit funny, but you know, that's the world of our sport, playing in the male dominated sport. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting time, and getting that recognition for women, and you know, making sure that we're brought up in conversations around the laws and everything like that is great to know that it's happening.
Hey Lane, it's getting pretty dark where you are, so I imagine I imagine that the night's going to kick on a little bit more. What are the rest of the plans tonight, and do you have to temper the celebrations a little bit knowing that the Wallaroos is coming up, or do you just go, you know what, tonight's a leave pass?
Yeah, look, definitely have to temper it, but I think I've got a little smoke bomb exit plan up my sleeve soon, which is pretty
very, very smart.
For me, but you know, you got to do what you
can tell. You can tell you're in the halves, tactical, very tactical.
Yes.
Elaine, it's so good to have you on. The Wallaroos, Canada just around the corner, the States, New Zealand, Pac Four. Looking forward to talking to you more throughout the year. But until then, get out of there and make a strong return.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was awesome to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Lane. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Lane Morgan seems like she's going to be having a great night ahead, but awesome to talk to her and get some insight into some of the law changes, developments and progression in the women's game.
Yeah, and I felt maybe a little bit weird asking that question. I feel sometimes, you know, the women, they just want to play, and yet we keep asking these, you know, big, you know, the shape of the game, which way is it going? And but God, she was a good ambassador for it. And I really enjoyed what she said there. Like, it was, you know, they like the challenge, but also understand that it could grow the game. And I think that's exciting for me because, I think the more we can actually tailor the game, and, you know, we're trying to do it in the men's game as well. We're trying to quicken up the game. We're trying to do all these things. The ball changes. It's very much in an attempt to grow the sport, increase its attractiveness. And, yeah, it's nice to see the support from the actual players too.
The funny thing about Lane as well, we've been trying to get her on the pod for the last couple of weeks, knowing that the Waratahs were flying. But this goes to show what the challenges are for women's rugby and those wanting to play rugby is the fact that they train the Waratahs women between 3 and 9 o'clock on Monday evenings. And so most people, they're having their stumps up, they're probably cracking a beer or having a glass of wine later of an evening, and the girls are playing rugby, training, honing their skills. So awesome to be able to get a hold of her, and it just so happens that they're out in the town celebrating what was their fifth title. Awesome success. And the Wallaroos squad announced Tuesday afternoon. I imagine it's going to be dominated, a 30-person squad. I imagine it will be dominated by the Waratahs after such a strong campaign.
Yeah, and rightfully so. As you say, it's been such a good campaign. They've, you know, dominated the Super W for a while now, and I think, it'd be very justified for them to get quite a few women in that team. And I tell you what, I've been on a few Mad Mondays, and I wouldn't be answering a call to doing a podcast, at 5:45 at night on a Monday night. So, no, it was awesome, and we really appreciate, Lane's kind of, openness to join us and talk some code.
Well, Matt, I reckon that's one of the best games I've seen in a long, long time. The Auckland Blues scoring 3 tries in the last 11 minutes to come from behind to beat the Reds 41-34. What a game on Saturday night we saw at Suncorp Stadium.
Yeah, it was a ripper. And, God, it was really good seeing on the weekend, and we'll talk about it later with the other match. But the two headline games, you know, the Reds and the Brumbies matches, they were against the, you know, the top of the New Zealand teams. And for me, those are the games that really mattered. And to see us really perform and perform well. In my playing days, you'd always death ride other Australian teams. It's nice now to actually cheer them on. And, geez, it was good. And they gave us something to cheer about, a hat-trick on a starting debut for the young winger there. And it was a ripper. It was a genuine ripper.
Have you seen a better run on debut than Tim Ryan scoring that hat-trick? And I think it was in 16 minutes he scored those 3 tries.
Yeah, no, obviously not. I was trying to think about it earlier. It's like, I think, you know, did Israel score like 1 or 2 tries in the Wallabies debut against the Lions or something? But a hat-trick.
Double, yeah.
Yeah, a double, yeah. Like, and that was amazing. But like, and the way he did, I think it was especially his last try where he's gone down the short side and he's not just putting the ball down, or it's not a Matty Fessler at the back of a mall. Like, it's a genuine, you know, they're genuine tries where he's created something out of nothing. And it was awesome to see. Awesome to see.
That's a bit of a low blow to our friend of the pod, Matt Fessler.
That's why he's not listening.
yeah. But you're not wrong. It was super impressive. The ability to burn a couple of guys, turn them inside out, beat them in a phone box, so to speak, and one of them being Mark Talia, that was amazing. Mm. And then the step back off the left foot. There wasn't a huge crowd there, but you could feel the intensity, the excitement that maybe a star is born is perhaps a little bit too high praise for a guy that's just playing his third match. It's a 20-year-old, but it was brilliant to be able to talk about a player so positively and score some long-range tries, which is the sort of thing that we see all the time in rugby league. You see Speckies in the AFL. To be able to have a couple of highlights, not just one, but two, but three, it was something to put Queensland rugby on the map, and it made headlines. It went viral on social media, Twitter or X or whatever you call it, around the world. And that's an amazing achievement for Tim Ryan, who's made his junior Wallabies debut last year and has looked just at home at every step along the way.
Yeah, and the big thing, so like from a marketing point of view, it's great, you know, hat trick and we can celebrate it and get behind it. But the big thing for me is it's a big match. It's the, you know, Anzac kind of weekend. We've been building up. It's against the Blues team, who are arguably probably the form team of the competition at the moment. And it's against a guy like Mark Taleo, who is top three wingers in the world, you know. And so for a young fella to get three genuine tries on his side is... it's awesome. Like that for me, we're getting excited about the right things. It's not a game against a lower ranked team where, you know, like I said, he's on the back of a maul and puts the ball down or something. He's genuinely shown, you know, a lot of promise in scoring those tries. And there's not many people who can honestly say that they've turned Mark Talay inside out, or, you know, they've scored three tries in a big match against a Kiwi team. So yeah, that was a positive thing for me on the weekend, was that we were performing against the top teams. And in the past, you know, we might have done a good game, say, you know, Moana at home, we might have scored a few tries or whatever, but to see us actually going, you know, hell for leather against the top teams, that was really encouraging.
It would be interesting to see if he actually keeps his place against the Crusaders next week, because he comes in for Matt Greeley, who was rotated out of the side, had a busy workload. It wouldn't surprise me, knowing Les Kiss and some of the selection surprises. He's worked with London Irish previously, where he brought through a lot of youngsters, and workload management and player development was a big thing. So it'd be fascinating. Like, you'd be filthy if you score a hat trick and then you might end up on the bench a week later. Yeah. But
yeah, like, can you drop a guy like that? Like, for me, if he, you know, if I'm him or I'm playing in the Reds team and he gets dropped, you lose a little bit of respect for the, you know, like, you kind of go, well, what, you know, is this a kind of meritocracy, or is this a grander plan where we're just kind of, you know? So look, I don't think Les Kiss can do that. You know, if he had plans on bringing back Greeley back into the team, you just probably say, listen, mate, it's probably got to wait a week. You know, when you score a hat trick on your chance, then we'll keep you in. But it'd be very hard done by if it wasn't.
The other thing that it really put up in lights for me was Sully Bunabalu, who scored one try, probably made up for an earlier blunder where he caught the ball early on and they should have been up 7-0 and they ended up trailing 10-0. That was an embarrassing moment. It's a head scratcher. He's a maligned player, but the instinctiveness that Tim Ryan brought to the game, where he chips so early on in his line, they just scored points, he's 7 metres out from his line, and he has the audacity to put a chip and chase, which comes off to pass to Hunter Paisami. That, to me, was perhaps even better than the three tries, because it showed a heads-up desire, but also a guy that just knows and probably gets rugby too.
Yeah, look, it's a hard one with Sully. I think we all know his potential and capability, but we feel that, you know, that maybe there's not, it's just not clicking. And then you see a guy like Ryan when he's like, it's pure intent. Like, it's just pure, giving it 100%, and what happens, happens. And I think that's probably the element that maybe we feel frustrates us with a guy like Sully, because you're sometimes not sure if he's mentally, you know, completely focused. And then, you know, you compare that to, you know, tries that you're kind of making it happen with a guy like Ryan. You're making it happen. He's, you know, chip, chase, whatever, but it's full on intent. It's commitment to the cause, and they're easy things to get behind.
Yeah, well, he wasn't the only back that started. Hunter Paisami, another cracking game, both sides of the ball. Geez, if you're Joe Schmidt, you've now got a couple of options to pick from at inside centre, but Paisami's putting together a really nice body of work. Consistency is the thing that Australian rugby players need to get better at, and he's doing that week in, week out at the moment.
Yeah, he is. I'm a huge fan of Hunter, and it's actually nice hearing on the telecast. You can tell Sonny Bill's really trying to get a comment on Hunter, because he as well, he sees there's a lot of potential there. And for me, the big thing is that he's now a triple threat. He can pass, kick and run and all at a very, very good level. So I think he's a guy that you've got to fit in there somewhere. He can technically play 13, but we saw Lenny Ikitau come back on the weekend as well. You know, there might be a little bit of concerns maybe about size with those two guys in the centres, but they, you know, like in terms of physicality, I think that they well and truly tick those boxes. So, yeah, exciting times. As I said, huge fan of Hunter.
And the great thing about the Reds on the weekend was that just like they did against the Chiefs when they upset them in the third match of the season, as well as against the Hurricanes in round two, was they brought the physicality that you need against a New Zealand team. And obviously that's the forward pack that rolls up their sleeves. The backs get them in a bit of position at times, but it's the forwards that win you these sorts of games. And Liam Wright, 24 tackles. Ryan Smith, 24 tackles. The scrum, for the best part, held up. The line-out was pretty good. Jeffrey Tumanga-Allen, great game. Alex Hodgman up against his old side. Matty Fesler. It was just a really well-balanced team that all brought somewhere close to their best for probably 65, 70 minutes before they conceded three quick ones. And you feel for them, but it's 80 minutes rugby, isn't it? And there's been so many Wallabies teams that have lost against the All Blacks by not playing 80 minutes.
Yeah, and it's a step in the right direction, though. Like these games are won physically. I've said it many times, the Kiwis, you get the highlight reels. If you, you know, if you watch rugby via Instagram, you'll think that it's made up of very flashy plays, but it's often carry clean, long clean, like ruthlessness in that contact area. And to be a chance, you've got to do that well. And it was nice. It was we had the horse before the cart in that sense. We were doing the right thing first. You know, they were getting the physical stuff done. And then, yeah, there'll be a few things that need to be improved, you know, like Sully's error, putting the ball down. You know, when you lose by one try, you start looking at things like that. You know, mental lapses that maybe could have, could have assisted in getting that win. But the good thing is that they were well and truly at the races in that sense, and they had a very good chance of doing that. So I think it's positive signs. They'll be disappointed they lost, but realistically, anyone who watched it and understands the context will understand that was a very good performance.
It really would have capped off an amazing weekend of rugby for Australia, particularly had they got up earlier that evening. The Western Force went down 7 points to 6, and what was a bit of a grind. It was 38 turnovers. You feel for your mate Nick White. He was one of the Force's best, but just too many errors in the opposition 22 and not taking your chances. Nick said, slipped through our fingers, another one, and it totally did. That was there for them to break their kind of winless drought on the road in Dunedin.
Yeah, that was their worst game of the year by far. Usually after these games, you go, it's one for the purists. I am a purist, and I thought it sucked. Like, it was awful to watch. And, you know, nothing personal to the guys, but it really was. It was a hard game to watch. You listen to the commentators, the Kiwis, even they were trying to find, you know, grains of positives. But I think every now and then you just got to go listen. There was probably a reason why that was 13-14, unfortunately, or whatever, how many teams there are there now, 11-12. There was a reason why that was kind of that game, because under the roof, there wasn't too many excuses. And, yeah, I was pretty keen for the next game, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, well, thankfully it lived up to the bill, that Queensland one. Oh, we'll talk about the Brumbies in a second, because that's where I was going to get to it, because that was obviously the great win that set up an awesome Saturday of watching for those out there. But have you been in many games, and can you put a finger on why it happens and maybe what might have happened in Dunedin on the weekend, where both teams actually played a lot of rugby in that first 20 minutes, but the tries never came? And it was maybe just the lack of patience, forcing the extra pass or deciding the option taking, going down the short side when you should go to the open. Do you know why those games occasionally occur and then it just compounds and compounds?
Yeah, it's obviously mental because both teams can play good rugby. We've seen it already this year and we just know that's the case. It just becomes a case of not losing. And when you are there was actually a cool kind of little win predictor that said, you know, if a team wins, they're a 50% chance of making the finals. If they lose, they're about 10% or whatever it was. And that – I watching that game, it felt like everyone was the teams were focused on if we lose, what happens. And so there was very much a case of not wanting to lose that match. And you know, in wet conditions or in wet conditions and in matches like that, you it's probably a bit more understandable. But the game, like it's under the roof. It's perfect conditions, I think. But it just felt like a team, two teams that were very much constrained by, you know, outcomes or understanding that if we lose this game, that's probably our season, and not wanting to do that. So, yeah, as I say, it was a tough watch. It's very understandable. I've been a part of many games like it as well, and you're often kicking the ball because you want the other team to make a mistake. And, yeah, unfortunately, it becomes quite a negative cycle and just snowballs a bit.
I was really hoping that one of the force players was going to just drop back in the pocket and look for a field goal, snap one, just anything to try to get their noses in front. Mm. They probably just weren't able to control the ball. A couple of errors from Reid Princep in really conditions and areas of the park where you'd expect a player of his experience to be able to control the ball. But probably enough about the force because it would put people to sleep, including maybe you and I too. What didn't put us to sleep was the Hurricanes going to Canberra, a place that they've probably struggled at in the past, controversial quarterfinal exit last year when Artie thought he'd scored. But what a match, what a win. And you know, the Brumbies have kind of re-emerged as perhaps being a contender rather than being a pretender after knocking off the previously unbeaten Canes.
Yeah, well, it was an exceptional game of rugby. Yeah, like it was so exciting for me. Really, really positive steps for guys like Lolisio and Tom Wright performing well in a big match. And I really, really feel like, particularly for a guy like Noah, that it's a breakthrough match. And actually, and Tommy Wright, that was a breakthrough match for them mentally, just kind of getting over that hump. They've both had tough games against Kiwi opposition in the past and in big matches, but they really, really stood up. And I hope that confidence-wise from here on, they kind of take that forward because, yeah, it was a great game. I think the big thing, you know, contender, pretender, I think it's a really good point. The big thing for me that came out of the weekend were home ground advantage. And we heard Stephen Larkham speak about it in the post-match that for them to be a chance, they need to be top two. You just have to. It's too hard these days. I know it's only Trans-Tasman. It's not South Africa anymore. But having a home game against the Hurricanes, it adds to the Brumbies' chances straight away. So I think they'll be looking for that for sure.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Tom Wright, another maligned player, left out of the World Cup squad last year, controversially. Can you see him and Andrew Kelleway even being in the same back three? Well, Kelleway was probably the only shining light out of the Rebels' performance on Friday against the Crusaders. Safe as houses, doesn't do too much wrong. But at times I feel like he looks just as comfortable in that wing. And then I look at Tom Wright and some of the things that he can do, the ball playing can do. It doesn't always work, but his decision to run the ball back rather than kick, and he made a long line break and it ended up being a turnover in the end. But in the second half, the Brumbies were under a lot of pressure. They were hanging on and he makes a big line break, which just relieved that pressure so much. Can you see those two forming a back three combination?
Yeah, I definitely can. I think you'd have Tom Wright at fullback just because he probably has a little bit more distance on his kicks as well. And I think having Kelleway there maybe provides a little bit of a voice to Tom Wright. So those decisions to run or kick are kind of half made for him. You know, he's looking at the ball in the air and he's hearing Kelleway on his shoulder saying, mate, kick it long, or let's go, let's go. And it kind of takes a little bit of that decision-making pressure off a guy like Tom Wright. And you see it in other positions with a 10 and 12. You know, if you have a 12 who's also a playmaker, he's often given so much communication from the outside, and it just makes the 10's job a lot easier. So, yeah, I think he could. I think both are quick enough to play on the wing as well. There's sometimes if you get two playmakers and, you know, a winger and a fullback, you lack genuine speed. But I think both can genuinely play on the wing as well. I'd probably be more likely to throw Kelleway on the wing and Tom Wright at fullback, but I think they would have a good little balance in the back three for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'd be heading down that path as well. Look, their forward pack rolled up their sleeves. It was the first time I don't think they lost a line out. I might be mistaken, but that was a big reason for their success. The rolling more got back to what it might have been previously under Dan McKellar. The fact that they've struggled in that area probably since McKellar left, that's a huge bit of confidence that they can take forward, because it just adds another dimension to their attack, and if you get it going, it's so potent, as well as their defensive more too. So that'll really please them. Disappointing injury to Blake Schopp, such a welcomed return to Alan Alalatoa. You can see the poise, his leadership. He's such a good man as well. He and James Slipper at the front, it doesn't get too much better there from an Australian perspective.
Yeah, and I there was a scrum, I can't remember when, but I just remember going through myself, I just went through the pack and I'm like, oh, this is kind of the Brumbies that you recognise, like a genuine physical pack. And look, I think there has been clearly some growing pains with the Brumbies trying to expand their game. But you were starting to see the fruits of it, coming out a little bit, which is really exciting. And the Brumbies will always have that perception of an extremely strong set piece. So even if they are struggling a little bit, teams will be on guard, you know, waiting for it to happen. So I think it's allowed Bernie the flexibility to kind of expand their game elsewhere, and then every now and then just remind the competition that they can go through you as well. So I think we're seeing some good signs there, and I don't know if this is a game that we would have I say we sorry that the Brumbies would have won in the past against a top team like the Canes. So for me, I feel like it is definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I liked Rory Scott, a good performance, added a lot of explosiveness with ball in hand. Charlie Cale, speaking of explosiveness, geez, he's a good player.
Yeah,
continues to show what he can do, ball in hand. But
I'm convinced he's going to be. Yeah, I'm convinced he's number 20, 21 in a Wallabies 6-2. Maybe 21 with a 6-2, and he can play centre if he needs to be. I was just convinced on the weekend. I don't know why, but I think that's a little something that maybe other teams won't have. I think you have him on as a 6-2. Or centre goes down, he goes to the centres, so be it.
I love everything about him that he's offered up. Bit of contracting news. He signed a one-year extension with the Brumbies. That hasn't come out yet, but I'm sure it will in the coming weeks.
Nice.
That's good from the Brumbies. Well, it's important to have the journo offer something every now and again. Can't just be leaning on your analysis and commentary. But he's a guy that the Waratahs were really interested in. Eastwood, former Eastwood player. I'm sure he probably still aligns himself to that Shoot Shield club. But no reason for him to go. There's interest overseas as well, and of course there's going to be for someone like him. But he wants to play for the Wallabies, and it is a big couple of years ahead. So probably a bit of smart negotiation to have a re-sign for 1 year and see where you go and how you progress, perhaps under a Joe Schmidt coached environment over the next little while. We're going to just talk about the Rebels now. This is really heating up at the moment. We saw last week the Docker come back, where the administrators, PwC, from a creditor's perspective, suggests that the company, the organisation, the Super Rugby franchise should continue, that it would be in the best interests of the creditors as well. It might not necessarily play out like that, though, because Rugby Australia are looking long-term. They're not looking in the short-term window, and they're thinking, this game has to be sustainable, not just for the Rebels, but for everyone. The creditors will vote on Friday. Even if it's voted, I still get the feeling like Rugby Australia will vote not to have them continue in the Super Comp from next year onwards. I just think that they've made the decision that they need to go back to fourth sides financially. Otherwise, the entire game perhaps could go under.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. We're getting snippets of it every now and then where someone at RA has a little Freudian slip or whatever, and then you go, oh, that's actually what he means. The creditors getting 35 cents on the dollar as opposed to nine, but at the end of the day, RA will still have to kind of bear the burden of anything if it does go south. And whilst I would absolutely love to see the Rebels stay, and I would love to see this kind of this consortium, take over and whatever, but it sounds like RA have kind of made their mind up and they're kind of going to let it go. And
they've been trading insolvent since 2018, and that's something that you can't downplay and sugarcoat, gloss over. The Rebels have been, unfortunately, in the loss-making business for way too long, and this is a professional company. It's not a charity, and it's tough to say that. I do wonder whether or not there's been this argument, whether or not Australian rugby is better with four sides. It almost just allows Australian rugby supporters to try to work out whether or not that is actually the case. And hopefully in the years to come, there might be a third tier competition. There still will be Melbourne, perhaps the Rebels or a Melbourne side involved in that. Maybe eventually back in Super Rugby. I can see Super Rugby returning to 10 teams going forward. Moana Pacifica are on their nose as well themselves. New Zealand Rugby bleeding chips. A longer competition with more home games makes it more sustainable for the rest of the teams, and that's really tough for Melbourne and Melburnians and Victorians. But I feel like this is where it's heading.
Yeah, look, it won't be the death of rugby in Victoria. There's too many people down there who care about the game. Unfortunately, with the game going the way it has in the past, this is just low-hanging fruit and it's an easy win for Rugby Australia. And I'm by no means saying I agree with it. I don't, but I think it's just inevitable. It's the way it's going to go, unfortunately. So, very sad, very dark times for our game in that sense. But, hopefully the guys at the top have got, a strategic direction that they can now push us towards.
Well, the Rebels need some good news. It didn't come on the weekend. It only gets tougher for them after that heavy loss to the Crusaders. They're going to be hosting the Blues this weekend. Good luck taking down them and Hoskins too. I wonder whether or not one or two players get rested perhaps, given the All Blacks still have their management workloads that they've got to adhere to. So that'll be fascinating to see what happens. Let's change the topic. Let's get a little bit lighter. Let's bring in Harry Johnston-Holmes. Harry Johnston-Holmes, welcome to the Rural Rugby Podcast. Good to see you.
Good to be on the show, mate. Thanks for having us. Yes, good to long-time listener, first-time guest.
Freshly groomed, mate. Sure. You're looking sharp. Have you just come back from the barber, or what's the go?
Yeah, no. This is like 10 minutes ago, kind of set up.
Is there?
I think I'm a couple weeks overdue, maybe.
Did Christy tell you this was video recorded? So you're like, all right, I better fix her up.
I thought I'd be maybe go like the blank or like a different profile picture or something. But it asked if I could access camera, and I just rolled with it. So just lucky I'm always looking good, eh?
Matty, you could have just put up a shot of your mate from Game of Thrones, right? It would have been
Mate, check this out. If anyone's watching this, if that's not Harry, I'm not here. I'll eat my hat.
That's new profile picture, I reckon. It looks next good. Next podcast I'm on, I'm just putting that up.
Yeah, I heard you're on date night as well. So, mate, you're looking freshly groomed, and we'll pretend it's for us.
Yeah, always looking after the boys.
Hey, Harry, you're pretty much the last person standing in the front row. So have they wrapped you up in cotton wool yet?
Nah, not as much as I'd like, but, I definitely think – anytime I'm I'm moving a little bit ginger, excuse the pun. I think if, which I usually am moving a little bit ginger, they freak out a little bit. But nah, I'm good to go. I don't run fast enough to tear any hamstrings, and I don't tackle hard enough to break my shoulder. So I think I'm sweet for the time being.
Mate, one thing I learned in my career was and when you want to sign a new contract, it's all about timing. And now I would just like to part, like, your time, you couldn't be more valuable at the moment. Have you thought about going up to DC and saying, like, listen, mate, I'm the only one, I'm one out of 10 who is still here. Do you want to maybe add a zero or something like that? Have you thought about that?
Because I feel like every man that's gone down has added a little bit more to the to the prospective price. But dying breed, the front rowers at Tars at the moment. But it's all good. It's all good.
Can you talk us through that? So last week, Hayden Thompson's stringer, the former England under 20s back rower, turns into a front rower. He goes down a fitness test, I think it was on the Thursday, that he obviously failed. Then your front row partner, Ross, comes in, gets injured early, plays on for quite a while. Are you the only one of the contracted 10 front rowers that still is standing?
Yeah, I think we had kind of done the calculations, Trossy and I, and we were saying that, yeah, it was him and I were the last ones remaining. And then he started getting strapped up for survival mode pretty early on in that game. And, I'd be lying if I said it didn't cross my mind that, I was the last one remaining. But I think the benefit of it just has been blokes like Julian Heaven, and now we've got, you know, Lewis Panini and Jay and stuff like that coming through. But it's definitely getting a little bit skinny in terms of if anyone else hits the deck.
Is there any reason why? Were they just freak incidents that's just meant that one after the other, the next person's gone down?
No, there's no like real correlation or pattern with it. Like when we were talking about it, we were like going through it all. And it's like we've got Belly's toe, we've got Mahe and Tom Lambert a knee, Archer Holt's shoulder, Dan Botha Achilles, Dave Parecki Achilles, you know, like every one of them just seems to be something different. And just been like seriously unlucky in that one positional group. So I don't think it's down to anything other than a bit of typical tar luck.
That tar luck you're talking about, mate, obviously a lot of close losses early in the season. And then, it just some tough games coming up. And recently, what's the mood like at the moment? Waratahs are always the most scrutinised team in Australian rugby because that's where, you know, that's where the biggest supporters are. How are you feeling? Someone like yourself, you are, you know, an older guy in the group and particularly in the front row, as you say, you're the only one kind of still standing. What's your role been like in kind of maintaining that morale? And, yeah, how are guys feeling in regards to all of that?
Well, I've been involved in some good and bad years at the Tars, and something that's always been a massive positive of the club and the environment is that it's very hard for the blokes to proper drop their heads and get a little bit toxic. The group's rock solid, which is, I've come to expect it, but it's obviously good to see that happening again in a rough year. But I think we've just been trying to just inject like as much energy into, like we do our reviews and like we're harsh on each other and the coaches, call a spade and everything. But I just think beyond, once we park that and we get the new information in and we move on to the next week, it's just been about injecting as much energy into what we're doing as possible. And if you came and watched us train, like you wouldn't think, you know, that's a team that's, you know, 2-8 or whatever we are, by the way we go about our business. But it was a pretty good initiative kind of put forward by Jakey Gordon at some point. Just to not kind of ride the wave too hard of results and just take it week by week. But no, the group's been good. We've obviously got some tough ones coming up. I just think we're well equipped in terms of energy and intent that we're gonna give it a good crack.
So it was 38-22 to the Chiefs on the weekend. Tars came out and that front row was working. Julian Heaven was on fire. It's great to highlight him because he wasn't even really hadn't played a game up until the start of the year, and then all of a sudden is probably being one of the top players this year for the Tars. Can you take confidence in the fact that the first half and especially the first 20 minutes was some of the best rugby you've played this year, going into a really tough game against the Hurricanes across the ditch?
Yeah, it's bittersweet, eh? Because you, yeah, like in that first, call it 25 minutes, just felt in control, felt everything that, when you're preparing for a game, and certainly against a team like the Chiefs who are quite atypical in the way they play, when things are working, you're like, well, this is awesome. All the hearsay of what our plan is for the week is actually, you know, coming into action and getting us the results. But the bitter part of that, obviously, is that you know that we're capable of doing that for the first 25, and we just have those lapses and fall off and let them back into the game. And, yeah, I just think that, you know, there's too many good teams within the comp to, you know, to give away 12-point leads and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was obviously great to have that that confidence that we can play like that, but it's also frustrating knowing that, yeah, we just let that momentum swing so hard and fast.
Yeah, Harry, one thing that's frustrated me a little bit this year has been the kind of external noise around the Waratahs. And you know, as we said earlier, it's the most scrutinised team, and rightfully so. But the chat about, you know, DC on his, you know, he's got four games to prove himself. There's currently a review going on. How much does that affect you as a player or the team? Have guys been tapped on the shoulder mid-season to give their view on how things are going? Like, what does that look like for a current Waratahs player?
Yeah, I think it's obviously tricky, but it is the nature of professional sport, and certainly Australian rugby. Like, there's always going to be there's always going to be instances like this where your team's under the pump, and therefore, you know, players and coaches are no different. But I think they've been quite good in I guess not sheltering the team as such. Like, we're all well aware of the process and like you touched on the review and stuff, but just making sure that it doesn't have to be everyone's issue. And so at the Tars, like, it's been mainly a leadership thing in terms of getting a player voice onto the matter, and it's all been managed pretty well in that it hasn't affected prep, it hasn't affected how guys go about their business. It is just a part of being at the Tars. Like, I think back to round one where we got a bad loss against the Reds, and we were, you know, then we were guaranteed wooden spooners by the punters, and then the week after we beat the Crusaders super round, and all of a sudden we were $1.20 favorites to win the comp. It is just, you know, part of being you know, in the sky blue jersey, that people love the headlines around the good and the bad. So, no, the boys have been used to it and are coping it pretty well.
It's a heck of a question there from you, Matt. Are you sure you're not the journo in this one?
I am sure, because I can't spell. I think I've even spelt my name wrong on here. But speaking of, I've got chef demission. Christy was telling me earlier that you are quite the chef yourself. You're cooking for date night later tonight. What's on the menu?
So tonight it's a Tuscan chicken salad, kale salad. There might be a
I'll tell you why there's a front row crisis, is because you're all eating chicken salad. Pathetic.
No. There could be a few undisclosed sides added to that meal, but
that's better.
I can't imagine a worse situation being than a front rower's girlfriend, because it's not a very glamorous eating life. But it's going to be delicious. It's going to be a cracker. So, yeah, got everything good to go.
Hey, HJH, have you had to, you made the switch back to loose head prop on the weekend. I want a two-part question. One, I want to know how difficult that is, and do you prefer going back to the loose head side? And second, do you actually need to eat more to stack on the kgs to get across to the tight head side?
A couple of questions in that. Let's go with, there's certainly, there's no secret that the tight heads are generally going to be your bigger of the front rowers and stuff like that. I probably haven't been blessed with the necessary genes that some guys get given, but certainly plus sides, rice pudding with dinner. It is a part of, I guess, your athletic development is making sure you got the necessary mass to make a bit of an impact during scrum time. So yeah, that's been something that we've been doing for the last little bit, obviously with the switch from loose head to tight head, which I did, I think it was 2020 was that first year of doing that. In terms of switching back, look, I always get a couple of reps here and there in pre-seasons. Obviously if blokes go down, I always have it on the resume still that I'm more than comfortable there. Really enjoyed my time there on the weekend. It was the first game I'd played in loose head. In the one jersey for ages, but just really comfortable. I think I've had some good times in that loose head position, but at the same time, I've had some good ones in the tight end as well. I think for me it is just building on that genuine ability to play both and just being able to provide the team with whatever they need. And like we saw on the weekend, it was good. Good example of that, getting a little bit unlucky on injuries and stuff like that and being able to confidently slot in. Obviously, the prep wasn't as cracker as I would have liked, but you're not always afforded that luxury. So, yeah, it was good to get back into it.
Well, mate, I'm sure it can get you into a few more test sides going forward. James Slipper has probably made a living of it. Not that he's not a starting loose head himself, but the ability to go on both sides is a massive feather in your cap there. Mate, we better love you and leave you, and you better show some of that love to your missus. Enjoy. Thanks for coming on the pod, and look forward to seeing you probably at training in a couple of days' time.
Can't wait, mate. Can't wait. Thanks for having us, lads.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, mate.
Hey, Harry Johnson-Holmes is a guy that I really like. Got a lot of time for him. I think he's a better player than people think as well. I like seeing him back at loose head. I think that's where he's better suited to. He can get on the ball. He can show a little bit more that he offers. But he's a funny guy and a good guy for the Tars to have and to hopefully keep, because I know that other clubs are looking at him as well.
Yeah, and rightfully so. He's playing... Play on both sides of the scrum. I'm sure there's many viewers. You might have lost a few whilst he was talking us through the intricacies of, you know, tight head and loose head and all that. But there's a lot going on there, and you don't see it as much in the modern day game now as we have we have two props on the bench. You know, in the past we didn't. So it is kind of cool seeing a guy like that benefit. And look, their resources are being spread very thin at the moment at the Tars, and he's doing a good job.
That can't be easy. And spare a thought for Darren Coleman, who must be just thinking, how do I get some more props? Because they don't have the money to bring them in at the moment, and they probably can't get loans from other super franchises because that centralisation component to rugby in Australia hasn't yet arrived. So seriously difficult challenge this weekend against the Hurricanes when you've got guys like Tyrell Lomax that are going to be packing down against you.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in that area with the centralization. I know in Ireland, they would move tens around all the time. IRFU would move a 10 around saying that, like, playing behind Johnny Sexton at Leinster is probably not the best idea. Let's move, you know, Carberry to Munster or whatever it was. So it'd be interesting to see how that kind of eventuates, because, you know, we're obviously, the person we're thinking of is a Pone Fatmausili playing, you know, at the Rebels, not getting any game time, and he's a test match player, and the Waratahs would, you know, bend over backwards to have a guy like him in their squad.
Okay, on that, I can't see him getting better. I can't see his contract value going higher but not playing any rugby. If I'm Pone, are you saying to Nick Styles in Melbourne, I'll come back if I'm needed, if anything happens to Taniela, if he's got a little niggle. I need 1 week's warning, but I want to go play for the Tars. They've expressed interest. This will benefit both parties. Can you see anything like that ever happening, and should it happen in a situation like this or not?
Not in the way you just said it. Like, it's not up to Pone to do that. You know, he does that, it gets said no, then he goes further down the pecking order at the Rebels because he doesn't come across as a committed player, you know. And so it's very much other guys, general managers, head coaches, they're the guys who have to be making those decisions. But, yeah, I think we need to get to a place like that because we just don't have the resources. We don't have it, and it seems illogical to have a guy like him not playing. And yeah, you're right. Would he benefit from playing Super Rugby every week? 100% he would. But it's not his job.
Because he's just as likely to get perhaps injured in Super Rugby as he is a club game where the pitches aren't nearly as good maybe, and preparation probably isn't as good either because it's not in that professional environment.
And look, at the end of the day, the reason it doesn't happen is because the Rebels could not give, you know, two shits about the Waratahs and vice versa because it's competitive. And so it's, once again, it's not on them to do that. But, yeah, I would like to see that happen eventually because, as I say, we just don't have the resources.
Well, it's a big weekend of Super Rugby. It always is, but more Trans-Tasman fixtures this weekend right across the board. They start Friday night with the Tars over to Wellington, the Rebels hosting the Blues, Crusaders hosting the Reds on Saturday. The Force doesn't get any easier when you're going up to Waikato to take on the Chiefs. I'm sure you've still got nightmares from 2013. Sorry to bring it up. And then the Brumbies hosting the Drua. It's not just Super Rugby this weekend as well. European Champions Cup is back. Friend of the pod, James Ram, and his Northampton Saints going over to take on Leinster at Croke Park.
Yeah,
I was about to say at Lansdowne. No, that's not the case. So that will be an amazing experience. Richie Arnold's Toulouse hosting Harlequins as well. So awesome weekend of rugby to look forward to. What are you looking forward to? Anything happening in Japan this weekend? Anything else to cast your mind to?
Over here it's the last round of the general competition, and then it goes into top four going to finals, bottom three going to relegation promotion, and so we're safe from relegation promotion. So this will be my last week of rugby for the year. So there's plenty going on, and it starts getting exciting here. It's starting to get warm now as well, so the games are a lot more free flowing, and plenty going on, and headed by a lot of Super Rugby games. However, I think they might be a little bit lopsided this week, unfortunately.
I think so too. Bernard Foley had a couple of nice touches on the weekend for Kubota. Shout out to Nard, still doing the business. Good on him. Hey, thanks again. Please do reach out on either social media, rate, review on the various podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, whatever it is, however you get it into your ears. But let us know what you're thinking, if you're liking, enjoying, if you want a different guest, if you want a different format, a different host, even.
Don't ask
totally
that.
Deep. Awesome to have Lane check in earlier and Harry Johnston Holmes. Best of luck to them and to whoever you support this weekend.
The Roar.